All right, good day, everyone. We're going to get started with the Sprint Showcase for Sprint 117. I think we'll still have some people filtering in here, but we're going to try and get started as close to on time as possible. So we're going to get going. And let me share my screen. Someone can just let me know when that comes through.
It does.
Great. Thanks, Sebastian. All right, so this is Sprint 117. We'll start with Team Ona and go through each one of the teams, what they worked on. So Team Ona was developing a mechanism to get the report data from Superset through the API. We're persisting the reporting stack and then working on scoping for DHIS2 and Kafka. They got through 20 story points spread across, looks like 7 tickets that were completed. There's also a few 5 tickets that are in progress and a couple that are being reviewed as well. So I expect that number to go up shortly. Go to JSI next. JSI was finishing up the remaining stories for the shipment file, scoping the UI for the metadata upload, and then working on some quick win tickets. They got through 3 tickets, as well as another 2 that are in QA and 2 that are in progress. On to Team Parrot. Team Parrot was working on figuring out the slowest reference data endpoints to start working on the performance fixes for them. I think as well as some other things, but I think that was the focus for this sprint. They got through 23 story points spread across, it looks like 8 tickets. And there's another one that's in QA, and it looks like another 6 that are in progress. A number of things that we're not quite finished with this sprint, but I hope that these things will finish up soon. Team Mind the Gap had no description, though I know that they were working on the multiple suppliers work and then also some of the notifications as well. A lot of discussions around that, at least. They got through 14 story points spread across 6 tickets, including 2 that need to have story points assigned to them. And then they have another 3 that are in review and 2 that are in progress. And Sam, if you get the chance, can you please make sure that the story points get added to the tickets where they're missing at some point during the day?
Will do.
Okay, so that's the things that our teams have been working on. I took a look at Sona earlier. Let me just refresh this, make sure it's still up to date. It looked like everything was still passing. So good job on that. Just scroll through this quickly. All right, looks good. All right, so just a reminder that we are trying to do the showcases just a little bit different, where each team will have 15 minutes to share. So team leads, please do try to keep to those 15 minutes. To get started, we will start with Team Ona. So Clay, would you like to share?
Sure.
Great.
Let me know when you... my screen.
You got it.
Cool. So there were kind of 2 different epics that the team was focusing on this sprint. One was about having Superset provided a file of data to like some consuming system. It's in the context of DHIS2 integration. So we're looking at using Superset to kind of define our indicators and then provide a file to DHIS2 or to some intermediary system. And then additionally, Antonate and Husna, who will need to get added to the Jira board actually, but Husna is a new developer who's joined our team and was working with Antonate on the epics around persisting the reporting stack content like after a redeploy. Just for some context there on what this epic is sort of solving. Whenever we redeploy the reporting stack, we need to manually reload all of the NiFi flows. You need to start the NiFi flows. We need to manually load in dashboards, populate the Postgres database with the schemas and the actual data. And so this epic solves that problem so that we can redeploy the reporting stack without needing to manually do all of that work. So to summarize some of the tickets that we completed this sprint. There's this one that Antonate worked on around persisting the schema and the data for Postgres. I had a couple tickets that were lingering from the previous sprint about defining metrics to send to DHIS2 and to write a wiki page that summarizes the content of the dashboards that we built in the 3.5 release. Additionally, our data pumps requirements gathering discussion. Wes, we can chat about this offline if it's remarked as dead or if we should leave that in progress, but it's something that's kind of, I think, longer. The topic has become sort of broader than what this ticket was initially kind of representing. And then here, three tickets that Jeanette finished up about that epic to have superset return data from any chart and handling authentication and authorization between OpenLMIS and superset via that route. There's a couple more tickets that are in review. There is persisting superset content after a redeploy, which Antonate just needs to do some testing on. And then there's auto-starting the NiFi flows, which Husna is working on, and we just need to do some testing as well. A few things that are still in progress. I need to sync up with Craig on this wiki page on DHIS2 specification. He's traveling right now. I think this might be done. We have moved a couple of these are our epics that we just have marked as in progress. So they're, obviously epics. We expect them to remain in progress over multiple sprints as we finish the tickets attached to them. Jeanette just got added to Confluence so she can write a wiki page explaining what she built out. And then we're still working on persisting the NiFi flows after the redeploy. So we have a way to auto-start them. We are now, this is research for auto-loading them. Does anybody have any questions?
One thing I think that Craig was going to change, I think we were going to remove those epics out of the sprint just because they're usually not things that you're, like specific things that you're working on.
Sure, I can do that. I won't do that on the screen. I'll just do that.
Are there any other questions or comments for Clay? All right. Thank you very much, Clay.
Cool. Thanks.
Let's move on now to Ashraf from Team JSI. Is Ashraf here? Oh, yeah, I see him on. But I don't see a mic or a video, so I'm not sure if he's really in or not. Ashraf, are you there? I can't hear you if you're saying anything. So Ashraf, if you don't mind, I'm going to skip JSI for right now and then move on. If you could either let me know if you want me, someone else to do it or maybe reconnect. I'm not sure what's going on there. Sam, are you okay to give the update for Mind the Gap?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I will share my screen.
All right, we can see it.
Okay. So this sprint, we worked a lot on a blocker issue and design discussions for notifications. So I'm just going to give an overview of some of the discussions we've had. And the first issue that we needed to unblock was for our multiple suppliers feature. So we had a concern with being able to enable the correct permissions for a partner to be able, a supply partner to be able to view the correct requisitions. There was a discussion that began on the forum, and Lukasz and Changsun led that, and we were able by the end of the sprint to come to the decision on how we would adjust the rights for these multiple supply partners. And we are going to be checking if the user has a correct right for the facility and program. And then for the program and supervisory node. So we were able to resolve this multiple suppliers issue. If there are any questions on how we came to this decision, there was a lot of discussion again in the forum. The other design that we worked on this sprint was focusing on notifications. So Nicodem began working on the overall design for consolidating our notifications, or as we referred to it in other discussions, the consolidation and the daily digest. This design is still in progress, but the link to the design is here, and we're still working through exactly how emails will be consolidated and then presented in a digest form so that users aren't notified too much. The second design discussion that Nicodem had during this sprint was determining which SMS channel we were going to use, and there were many meetings and discussions about this, and also a post in the forum about this, but we did decide to move forward with TextIt and RapidPro to also gather more information on how we came to this decision. Please take a look at the forum posting or this corresponding page. Does anyone have any questions about any of the tickets that we worked on this sprint?
All right, doesn't sound like there's any questions.
I'll stop sharing.
I'm just trying to coordinate with Atra for 1 second. All right, we're still having some technical difficulties for Team JSI, so I will move on to Team Parrot. Sebastian, would you like to present?
Sure. Thank you, Wes. Let me share my screen.
Okay. All right, we got it.
Great. So yeah, as it was mentioned, our goal during the sprint was start fixing the slowest reference data endpoints. We also had some concerning the requisition performance that we have taken in the previous sprint. We didn't quite get to completing all of them. One is currently during the test, so we believe that all of the code there was done. But we still need to verify how good the improvement is with the Malawi set data, because this ticket was originally verifying the times with the Malawi dataset. So yeah, we just want to verify whether there is really a good improvement, whether a good improvement can be seen there comparing to what we have now. There is also a good progress on those tickets that we have in progress. A lot of code changes have already been pushed. You could have noticed a lot of contract test failures recently, and they are caused by those changes. So the problem with the reference data endpoints is that a lot of OpenLMIS screens are affected, and this is causing those problems and the need for us to go to those screens and update them if any of the reference data endpoints has changed. On the other hand, we have made a good progress and moved to DOM a lot of other tickets, especially all of the blocker bugs and critical bugs that were there. I will actually get to showing the ones that are assigned to me. And those were the product code, the product code, the product name column, and the unit of issue not being visible in requisition print. And hopefully I can just quickly show that. So this problem only occurred for newly created requisition templates. So as you can see, I have created a test requisition template for the family planning program. And hopefully I can quickly initiate a new requisition and print it. So we went to requisition, we have printed it, and the product code, the product name, and the unit of issue is there. Okay, and with that, I will hand it over to Gdańsk. So Claudia or Mateusz, who wants to continue?
Okay, so let me share my screen. Okay, can you see it?
Yes.
Okay, I have one ticket to show you. It's about a functional test for adding comments to requisition. And this test checks adding comments to requisition on every state, and also checks view history, whether a user is able to see the message history. And whether the saved comments are not editable. And as you can see, we have adding comment for initiate requisition, then submitted, authorized, rejected, resubmitting, reauthorizing, approving, and then all comments. Yeah, and in this sprint, I also added profilers to all endpoints, all reference data endpoints used in requisition service. And I believe that's it. Do you have any questions? Okay, so I pass the ball to Mateusz.
Okay, let me just share my screen. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So, in this sprint, I was mostly working on this ticket with fixing the POD, get POD step in the requisition initiate screen, which actually the most of the work is done. but the ticket isn't closed yet because we are kind of like want to verify the data, the how the times improved against the Malawi data set. But one thing I can say is that on our performance data, when we loaded the new demo data, which is about 50,000 PODs and about 100,000 POD line items, the times kind of went down from about a couple of seconds, like 3 or 4, when we are getting the single POD by order ID, to about, let's say, 1.5 second tops for the 90% of the 90% of the requests in the performance tests. And I also fixed the performance for the searching PODs, all of them, because this actually is a one endpoint, so this actually went down from about 100 something seconds to 1.5. So this is a great improvement. Also was made in this area. Nextly, I was working on the creating new functional test instance. So now functional tests have their own server. Basically, the functional test. The functional test starts the server on its own using the script to start the instance, the EC2 server. Okay, so basically we are using the AWS API and waiting to server to be running. Also, the functional tests are using the new script that stops the instance after the tests are done. So the server isn't working in the downtime between tests, between the functional tests. So basically, we are doing the same thing, but also I've added these 3 minutes timeout after the calling the AWS API because we had some issues with start instance script was running too fast after the recent functional test run. So this was the problem. Also, we have this depleted functional test job, which actually is taking the versions of all services and the Docker Compose file from the ref distro repository, and you can actually select the version of the ref distro that we want to use while deploying the functional tests. So this is also configurable. And what also was done in this ticket was, as I said, yeah, running. We are running the on the functional test run. We are doing the deploy to functional tests, and then we are always running the stop instance script using the. Properties for the environment properties for the functional test instance. And yeah, as you can see, there is no Docker Compose file and the settings env file with the service versions for the functional tests, as it is for the other servers. So. And this is all configurable in the deploy to perf test Jenkins job. So basically, this will be everything from me. Do you have any questions?
I had one question. It was really cool to see the huge improvement in the performance on the POD stuff. I was curious where the performance goal of trying to hit less than 1 second came from. It looked like most of the other goals that I had seen were less than 500 milliseconds.
So you are asking about so actually about this amount.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure. No, I wasn't the author of this ticket, so I'm not sure how we estimated this requirement, but
I mean that's a pretty old ticket from an old performance analysis. So that's probably where that acceptance criteria came from.
Okay. I mean, we might want to standardize on what our expectations are in general for API endpoints. So, I mean, maybe 1 second is fine for this one. I have no idea, but it looked like in most other places we had said less than 500 milliseconds, so less than half a second.
Yeah, that's correct.
I would mention that we definitely don't do requisition initiate in 1 second currently. Especially with the performance data set that we are currently using, so about 1,000 products. And the improvements that were made in this ticket were about the POD retriever. So that should be taking less than a second and less than half a second probably. But yeah, the whole requisition initiate, which consists of several other API endpoint calls, definitely doesn't take less than a second currently.
So how long does this take then overall?
Well, we don't know how long it takes with the Malawi data set, as it's not currently loaded on the performance test server. With 1,000 products that we currently have, so with the like 4 times larger demo data than this, it takes about 30 seconds.
And where was it when we started working on this ticket?
We only have the numbers for this lower data set, the Malawi data set. So I think we should be comparing the numbers to what we have here. Because this new performance data set is from 2018, so after this ticket was created.
Right. It seems like we might want to update this ticket with the performance data that we're actually going to be testing it against.
Yes, we definitely need. Well, we need to make this ticket about the get POD step from the requisition initiate as it's in the title.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it does seem like we have some more work then on this. on this performance work in general too, just to figure out how we can effectively track what kind of improvements we're seeing, but also be consistent about what our acceptance criteria are.
Okay, so this would be everything for me. So I'll probably pass the ball to Paulina.
Yeah, hello, looking for more screen. Okay, so during this sprint, I have completed 2 blocker bugs. The first one was about the error when trying to convert the requisition to order when status message was longer than 255 characters. Here you can see the screenshot of the error. Let's write a little bit. So this is, it was this error, and now I would like to show you how I have fixed this. So I have already gone through the requisition workflow, and I have prepared the requisition ready to order with a long status. Let's convert it to order. It was successfully converted, so I want to show it. And it was this one, June. So this status message was longer than 255 characters, and it was changed by adding a migration, changing body type from varchar to text. And also we can see that it was added to the list of orders. This is it, this one. So it was fixed and it works. And the second bug was about sending the reset password email. This error occurred in such situations as creating new users and sending reset password email, or just resetting the password during as administrator and from the login page. So let me go to add a new user. So the send reset password email option is chosen, and I should get email in a moment. So this is the email. So this works the same for other situations. This would be everything from me. Do you have any questions? If not, then thank you very much.
So that was everyone from the team Parrot. Are there any questions to any of us about any of the tickets? Okay, so that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Sebastian. Ashraf, I think I see that your mic is on now.
Yeah, is it better now? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. I'm actually working from home today because we have been kind of slow snow and, you know, like very sub-zero temperature in our environment. And so that's why the audio from my home was not properly configured. So apologies for the initial issues with the audio. So let me share my screen first. Do you see my screen?
Yep, we can see it.
Okay. So we are on the sprint, and then Wes already gave an overview of what we have been working on. So I will not go to kind of duplicate what he's already said. So, but I'll just explain that, you know, why a few of the tickets are in the QA still and why in progress. So in the QA for the two tickets that Elias has worked on, you know, in fact, Elias worked on four tickets, but out of this, one is in the done, two is in the QA. So he has received feedback, for the code review, but still hasn't able to address all of those. But we have the full day today available to us. So that our optimistic expectation is that Elias will be able to complete it by the end of the day, like today, to address the feedback that he has received from other PR programmers. And the same goes for the other one that is in progress. So he actually hasn't put it to the review stage yet, but he is trying to finish up the test for those. So once this is done, and he's hopeful that he'll be able to also put it to the review today. And if the review comes in, he'll be able to complete it, or otherwise it will just, you know, go to the next sprint. So, but at least all of those things in the final stages, just kind of back and forth for the test and the review stage. And there's two tickets that Adunia and Teklu has worked on. So let me, for the interest of time, I'll just give the update for that. So Adunia's ticket, which is 5928, initially he struggled with these things. He was not able to reproduce that, and he has to kind of download, and, you know, as you guys know that he's based in Ethiopia, his internet isn't that good. So you have to download all of those distros again, And then he found out that this is not really a bug, this is environment related. You just have to make sure that all of the distros are on the most up-to-date version. And if it is there, then this would be, then, you know, this is not a reproducible bug. So, but, you know, he had to spend some time on this. And then when he discovered that this is not a bug, it is environment related. So he moved on to another ticket, which is 5857, but he wasn't able to complete it within this electrical case, but he's in that is in the in progress category, which he will finish by the next sprint. Likewise, another ticket that TechLoo has worked on, which is 5853. So he got blocked because it is related to another bug, unless that bug is fixed, which is OLMIS 3623. And he and also Adunia assisted him for the communication with the Slack. And there was an agreement that, yes, true, that it has been blocked by a bug. Unless that bug is fixed, that he cannot really work on it. So, but he is kind of actively working on the Slack channel about this. So hopefully he'll be able to complete it by the next spring. So that's why, you know, those things are not still in the down category. And I have worked on the upload reference data. So I will just take 2 minutes to give an overview of what I have worked on. And then afterward, I will pass it to Elias. Elias is gonna showcase, you know, at least one or two of his tickets that would not take that much time. So for the reference data, so there are a couple of issues. I have to give me a bit of a background about this. So for the reference, the historical what we have seen for the country implementation, that is a process that at least for the first time when you begin installing and uploading your all of the data, it takes 8 days. And you have to collect the data and there's a dependency for the data. For example, one data set cannot be uploaded until the other data set has been uploaded first. So with those experience, you know, we have learned what we have seen on the ELMIS and what we have seen on and also the OpenLMIS. So we came up with a UI that even, you know, improved further than on what we have on the ELMIS, you know, what we've learned along the way. So the idea is that instead of just going to one main structure, we have to analyze in all principles and
Ashraf?
Yeah.
Ashraf?
Yeah.
We're having trouble hearing you. I think perhaps you would want to, can you just try to share just the your browser instead of the whole desktop? I think that might be using up a fair amount of your bandwidth because your screen looks amazing. Yeah, you're sounding very digitized. I think it's not just me. Yes, as Josh says, you sound like Tron. I can hear that you're talking, and I think you just said, can I hear you? I can hear that you're talking, but I can't hear any of the words that you're saying.
Give me a moment.
Okay. I've got the extreme close-up of part of your screen. There we go. That's.
Is it better now?
Yeah, I think so. A little bit better on the voice side, and we can see your screen.
Okay. So this time I just like sharing a portion of the screen instead of the full screen. So I was giving an overview for the UI design, proposed UI design for the upload. And I was telling that, you know, we've learned from our e-commerce experience that when a country for the first time wants to do that with MIS or e-commerce, the whole process is to collect all the master data. And all the master data has a dependencies. If a policeman is after the facility or the product, on the other dependent data has a master data first. And we are seeing that this is the master data is not big. So,
Ashraf?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I can't understand anything that you're saying right now. I'm sorry. I think it's just the bandwidth that you have available. Are other people having the same problem?
Yeah, I can barely hear anything.
Yeah, same for us.
I'm calling the phone, and this time on the Zoom, you'll have unmute me, Wes.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, Ashraf?
So I can connect to the computer audio, and I can call into the phone, but on the Zoom,
okay, I think I heard you say something about trying to call in on the phone. Do you want to hand over to Elias while you try to do that?
Yeah. Sure. Like you can hand it over to him.
Okay. Elias, if you don't mind taking over while Ashraf is working on his connection. And Ashraf, if you could stop sharing your screen.
Still cannot share my screen.
Okay, yeah, I think you should be able to now.
Yes. Okay. Can you see my screen?
Yep.
Okay, great. I have worked on a few tickets. These are all around the shipment file processing. One of the tickets that was done is the shipment file processing related configuration and documenting that. This ticket was about creating a documentation for the configuration. There is a new wiki that I created and wrote all the thoughts around what needs to be configured for the shipment file processing to be able to pick files from either the FTP that the ERP will put the shipment file from, or a local folder that the fulfillment service will be able to access. This documentation is on the wiki. These documents, all of the assumptions, there are certain assumptions that the whole program assumes to make sure that those are fulfilled when a person wants to configure it. This documentation explains those assumptions too. These are like, basically we only support CSV file processing and certain columns need to be in that CSV file to be able to be processed. And there are also other configuration related items that need to be addressed by an implementer. And these are all documented in this page. The three key things that need to be configured for a properly functioning shipment file processing is first the shipment template configuration, second the transfer properties configuration, and third the shipped by ID, which are all documented in detail, along with what to take note for. This is one of the tickets that I worked on. The next ticket that I worked on, which is in QA, but which I expect to be complete today, is this ticket, LMIS 5672. This ticket is all about making sure that if an administrator configures a new transfer property, that new configuration is picked up automatically. The previous implementation, which was complete in previous sprints, was that these configurations are read when the application starts for the first time, which means when the fulfillment service is started, the necessary Spring integration context will be created and the monitoring will happen. But if an administrator creates a new transfer property, that was not automatically picked up. And this work is to make sure that if a new transfer property is created on runtime, the appropriate context is initialized and the monitoring starts automatically. The other ticket that I've worked on is improving the shipment polling to allow it to support two more protocols. Previously, it only supported FTP, but due to some of the work that was done for this ticket, it now supports SFTP with just password, not using key files. And also, it's also supporting file-based polling, which means if there is a folder that the shipment, the fulfillment service is accessing or can access, it can be configured to read from that folder and be able to do what it was doing with the FTP servers. And this is, in our experience, this was also a very good feature for us in ELMIS, because some of the countries decided to use, instead of using FTP, use something like Dropbox. And for Dropbox to work, all we had to do was mount a volume in our container, and Dropbox also reads the same volume and be able to synchronize to another system. So in OpenLMS V3.2 for shipment file processing, we now support local file as well. So these are the two tickets that are close to completion. The third and last code-related work is about improving the shipment processing again. This time around, it's about handling cases where the orderable is not identified. In the previous implementation, what we had was if an orderable is not found in the OpenLMIS reference data service, we were throwing an exception and throwing the file to an error folder. But due to this work on this ticket, if a few orderables are not identified in the OpenLMIS, the file is not marked as a bad file or an error. Instead, what happens is all those rows that have an unidentified product code or orderable ID will be collected and converted to a JSON object and are stored as an extra data column in the shipment itself. So this means the reason why the product code was not known in the first place, maybe because the two systems did not have the same product code. And if at a later time they get to synchronize the product codes, the extra data column from the shipment objects can be parsed, and all those products that are newly identified can be properly initialized in the shipment line items. And this work preserves those erroneous or unknown products in those rows in the extra data column of the shipment object. With that, to quickly show the two functionalities that we've talked about, what I can do is show you what little change I've made to the Docker Compose file. Here, what I've done is just mount this folder, temp OpenLMIS fulfillment shipment, to this other folder inside the container. What I can do is I can add a new transfer property using the API. And this time, it's not going to be an FTP type, it's going to be a local type. And I'll be able to show you that the monitoring is working. And with that, I will be able to show, first of all, at runtime, you're able to add a new transfer property, and that is picked up automatically, and the monitoring starts as soon as it's picked up. So to do this, I will be showing you that I have that folder here. So this is the temp folder, and as of now, it's empty. I'm going to send this. So now that transfer property is already saved. And at this point, what I expect is that the process will start monitoring a folder inside this shipments folder, and that's going to be an incoming folder. So there is an incoming folder now. And now if I placed files in there, I expect that it will be picked up, whether or not it's an error, it will be picked up automatically and processed. Now, so that file has been processed. Yes, so this is saying that the file has been processed. And if I search for it's an error, and it's placed in the error folder. There are different reasons why this can be an error. I won't go into that, but I can also show that for some products, it might be this one is also an invalid one. So for valid shipment files, it's placing them in that archive folder. And for invalid ones, it's placing them in the error folder. The reason why I randomly selected files. So for example, while the configuration is for order by code and product by ID, I uploaded a file that's with different configuration. That's why it appeared in the error folder. Apart from that, the polling is working as expected, and this is the expected behavior. And with this, we were able to also accommodate a new protocol using the file, local file, and also at runtime, we're able to apply change to the transfer properties. Do you have any questions?
I have a quick, well, I have maybe two quick questions. I'll make my questions quick. do we need to do anything on the deployment of this for saving that file, saving that volume? I'm just looking at with this distro here, and the volume's not jumping out at me. So I'm wondering if we need to have a discussion about that, or is that coming?
We support file-based integration, but if it's not configured, it's not going to automatically bind that volume. Until it's being used, I don't think there is any need to add an additional space for it.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll follow up with you offline and just try to figure out more what that means.
Okay.
I do think it's great that that you're taking what you've learned before and applied it to that extra data field. That looks really interesting. I probably don't understand all of the details for how you'd reprocess it, but I'm wondering how would someone learn about what the information in that field means, so that they could reprocess it later. Is it in the API docs, or?
That's a good feedback. I did not have any place that is documented, and this ticket is still in progress. But once it's done, I'm thinking of updating this shipment file configuration so that some information will be here for the new data that you'd find in that extra data column.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Awesome.
Thank you.
I did have a couple of comments as well. The first was that on this, the same ticket that Josh was just talking about for the shipment extra data.
Yes.
Anything right now that is planned or already exists to process that extra data?
Yes. That's interesting. In ELMIS, what we've seen is that there is one or two products that's unknown in the ELMIS. And because of that, we were rejecting almost 90, a significant portion of whatever shipment file was coming to us. And that didn't seem to be reasonable. We could have used information about 90 products, but because of one missing product, we were rejecting a full shipment file. And we preserved that data in something similar to extra data, but there has never been a feature to go back and process it. But that is with the knowledge that when we seek to update this thing, we still have data that we can go back to and recover. That feature was not implemented in ELMIS, and I was not thinking of implementing that feature here too, but I think it's a good point that we should always think about when we can try to go through the extra data and pick up these products and recover them.
Okay. And then is there any notification or information that happened when a shipment file was processed? That there was, you know, there were some line items that could not be processed?
Yes. So in ELMIS, what we've done is we built reports that show how many shipments were processed, and then how many of those shipments had such invalid products. And by doing that, we were able to show that at least the numbers, but here we don't have anything that shows.
Okay, so right now it doesn't fail, but it does kind of go into a black hole in terms of, like, it goes into extra data, but nobody knows that it happened and would know to go look. And there's nothing.
Oh, that's true. That's true. The current implementation is like that. Yes.
Okay. That does seem like a potential gap. The other feedback I had was when you get an error, when you're, and you know, the file gets moved to the error folder, what happens if the file with the same name already exists? Does it just add like a 2 or something to the end, or
the current feature is it will override it. It will not add any number to it.
Okay, because I was wondering if it might be helpful to, instead of just copying the file directly over with the same name, but to append like a date stamp to the file name, and then also to create a log file that would, you know, with the same name.log or something, so that you can be able to say, not just see that something failed, but also actually have information in the same place about why it failed.
Yes, that makes sense. The current implementation is just throwing the log to whatever logging the OpenLMIS is using, mm-hmm. but we can capture that and place it in a similarly named file. I will take that and create a ticket and implement it.
Okay. Thank you, Elias. Any other comments or questions for Elias? All right. Thank you for showing that off, Elias. Good work on the shipment file report.
Hi, this is Mary Jo. Elias, one thing about the configuration documentation. I was wondering if you'd be willing to work with Sam to get that actually incorporated into the configuration guide itself. So
I will do that. Okay. Yes. I saw that for some functionalities, there are different pages, but I will work with Sam on and integrate it there.
Yeah. There's an easy way of doing it. Just framing it in or actually moving it over, but just if you could connect with Sam.
I'll do that. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the feedback.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we want to try to go back to Ashraf? We don't have, we have a little bit of time left in the meeting. So if we could quickly, I don't know, Ashraf, if you want to try again quickly to go through what you're trying to show us before.
Yeah. So can you hear me now?
We can hear you very, very nicely.
You sound like okay. All right, so I'm going to share, and do you see just my browser area?
Yes.
Okay, hopefully the audio is a bit better this time. So what I was saying earlier, that for the reference data, so we came up with a kind of proposed UI that also tried to improve from our ELMIS experience, so that we show that what are the dependencies for the upload. So instead of just one single menu option, that we display all of the master data or the reference data that you're supposed to upload. And this kind of serial number that you see is coming from the ELMIS experience. And I would explain that why I still haven't been able to figure out the OpenLMIS. I will explain that. So once we are able to figure it out, then those dependencies would be based on the OpenLMIS current version dependencies, not the ELMIS. But for the UI purposes, the idea is to show that what is the first file that you're supposed to upload, what's the next one, and so on. And we also show you that what would be the last update that you uploaded it, because in our experience, we have seen that this process goes over days and weeks. So you may be able to, you know, can prepare one of the master data to upload, but the other things might take more days. So that once you come back here, you'd be able to see when it was last updated and how many records were updated. And for example, if this is a week-long process, you came up with the facilities and you see that at the time, everything from the facility to others would not have any update date or the record count there, but other one will show that when it was last updated and what's the record count, so that you know that you're supposed to begin from the facilities. And then move on, so that all of the required data that you have been able to upload, and this proposed UI is, you know, particularly designed to give you enough clue about what you have done and what are the remaining tasks that you will have to do. So, for example, if you're uploading one particular thing, so you click on upload, and then idea is to show a dialog box. So in the OpenLMIS, I believe that you know, and this is a kind of new thing in the OpenLMIS version 3 as opposed to OpenLMIS version 2, that there is a two file. One is the kind of mapper file, another is the actual data file. So, and I believe that the mapper files is, you know, something that is by default there, but for the implementers, they can perhaps have the option to update the mapper file if they have, you know, different ordering on the field or some other things that is not kind of defaulting. But idea is that by default, the mapper file would be there. And if you think that you don't want it to use the default one, you can remove it and then upload your own one. And then after the mapper file is there, then you'd be able to upload the data. And also in the same kind of UI that we have, idea is to give you the instruction that what you're supposed to do, and also an area to give you the kind of, success or the failure messages for the upload. So in this proposed UI, I believe that we try to bring in the current OpenLMIS as well as the ELMIS experiences to try to improve the user experience there. Let me quickly jump to the reference data. So what we have seen in the OpenLMIS, that this has been quite a while that it's been updated. This is over 2 years old, and this is also not a microservice. And also we don't see any of the sample CSV file or the sample like mapper file. And perhaps for the Malawi implementation, Soldevolo team might have those things elsewhere. So with this experience, we would we would have to come up with a plan to work with them to understand that, you know, where to find those requisite information, and accordingly come up with the different tickets that needs to be completed. For example, if this needs to be converted to a microservice, then that would be like another ticket. And it could be quite a large ticket. And then for the defaulting of the mapper, where those mapper files are, so that we can put it at the right places, so that in that in this kind of display, you're able to see that was the default mapper there. And hopefully with those, you know, iterative discussion with them, we will be able to figure out exactly what needs to be done. So it's going to be an epic. It would have different kind of tickets there. And then we'll start to, and we already started to work on it first with the kind of proposed UI. And then we'll fine tune it to the specific tickets and then put those tickets to the sprints. And for the kind of facility information, as I talked about that for the facility, we said that we will use the resource map. So unfortunately, because of some changes at the Instead website, all of a sudden my kind of login don't have any authorization. Earlier, when I created an account, they gave me authorization for the resource map section, but they may have deployed an updated version and I lost all of those. So I initiated a ticket with Scott. So hopefully he'll be able to give me the you know, kind of restore my authorization so that I can continue with that. But for the kind of UI purposes, so this is the proposed UI, but I'm not able to capture the specific UI from the resource map because as I said, I don't have access there anymore. But the idea is that you create an account in the resource map. In the resource map for the country that you are working on, for example, Tanzania, they already have a list of the facilities there because they have a kind of facility registry that's already implemented there. So the idea, you browse through the facilities that they would have if they have a facility registry already implemented in the country. And if you find some facilities that is not there, then you'd be able to create like new facilities. Or if you find that you have some field, for example, in the OpenLMI, you know that for the program that has a start date, so that when you say that the LMIS report is not, or the facility is not sending the LMIS report for a specific program. So if that program become active, say from the month of June, it would be incorrect to show that they are not reporting in earlier months. So that's why the purpose of the start date. But this is a very, a field that is quite kind of unique to the OpenLMIS. So you'd not expect those type of fields to exist in the resource map, but the resource map is extensible framework. So it would allow you to add additional attribute. So for your curating purposes, the idea is you browse through the facilities, you identify the additional attributes that you need for your purposes, you'd be able to create those and then update the data there. And then once those additional the facility that they already have and the new facility that you may have added, then you go through them and then visualize it on the map. And in the resource map, they would also allow you to verify the GPS coordinates for the facilities. So what they say through the cloud, through the crowdsourcing, that they do have, you know, some of those GPSs, but say if I'm in that particular facility myself, and I know that the crowdsourced GPS is incorrect for my facility, I would be able to kind of drag and drop the map pointer to show exactly where my facility is. And then the resource map would be able to update the GPS coordinates there. So with this, you know, process, once you finalize your facilities, then you would be able to call the APIs. As part of our work for this, that we will try to automate these things to use the APIs. But in my conversation with Scott, he also mentioned that you may not be able to rely on the API. For example, if you created new attributes, he cannot guarantee that whether the API would behave the correct way. But he was also not the original programmer, so he was a bit unsure about that. So that's why we also came up with optional fallback option. So if the API, automated API call doesn't work, that in the resource map, there is also an export option. So export the CSV file. So that would be the backup option. And as we have seen in the earlier, that in the facilities, you should be able to upload your CSV file that you can download it from the resource map if the automated option did not work. So with that, I will rest. And if there's any question, I will fill those.
Thank you, Ashraf. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff here that we actually need to talk about more. I think this kind of detail probably would be more appropriate for the product committee. Because it's still like, it seems like a lot of this is still being planned. But yeah, I think there's a lot of discussion like this, the UI that you're proposing here, I think is something that I know that I would like to give some more feedback on. I suspect others would as well. Mm-hmm. So, is it possible for us to set up, for you to set up a time where we can chat about that?
Yeah, in the upcoming product committee meeting, maybe you can add it as an agenda if that makes sense.
I can do that. Yeah. No, we can do that, but I think there might be some other more feedback that we would need to give as well.
Yeah. Okay. I would just like to call out that, remember this, Ashraf, is the first piece of work where JSI is getting directly funded to do this. So it's not a part of the GAP project. And so you aren't, and to be honest, I haven't seen a grooming call from Team JSI in a while either. But in my mind, this is an example of what do we do when it's not part of our sprint meetings. Like in my mind, all of this discussion and flags about blocking with Scott should all be happening in a grooming call or more iteratively and right away, so you're not getting blocked up and there's never a risk for this not getting finished before 3.6. And so I hope that you and Wes can figure out how do we sync up, or how do you present to the technical committee if it's design decisions that are being changed from the initial. And I also wanted to say, which epic is all of this documentation connected to? I believe the shell epic that you were going to use hasn't yet been changed or updated. So have you been connecting like this document or all of your, you know, design work to a different epic?
Yeah, so you, I do recall that you have mentioned that epic number, and at the time I said yes, I would do, but afterward I forgot to note the epic ID that you mentioned. Could you mention it, or if it is not quickly findable, could you just ping it to me through Skype and then I will update it? I had the intent to do that, but I could not find the epic that you had mentioned.
Yeah, I can do that. It was the epic that we all voted on to get approval to put forth as a proposal. I will send you that link, but I will stress it is extremely important that you keep the epic up to date, like if it's in progress, what your tickets are, because this is the donor reporting and how governance committee understands what we're working on. So thank you for doing that going forward.
Yeah, so I heard two different things. One is the idea of discussing it in the product committee. Another is the grooming call. So which way are we going?
I would say both. The product committee meeting, I've been asking every single time for an update. If you need to go through the details, I would say you need to do a grooming call, but that's just my opinion. I'd let Wes.
Yeah, I agree, Mary Jo.
Final decision.
I agree. I don't want to go into too much detail on the product committee call or even a tech committee call. I think this needs to be fleshed out a little bit more before we get to that stage.
So it looks like that, you know, by the description that both of you say, that perhaps the more high-level discussion would be on the product committee. So we'll first start with the product committee, and then afterward, enrich with the feedback that we get from there, then we'll come to the grooming call, right?
That's fine with me.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments or questions for Ashraf? I do want to move along.
I will just quickly mention, Ashraf, it's Sebastian, that in the OpenMIS RepSeed tool, in the main directory, you have the README file. And this README file contains a sample input file and a mapping file that that you can use. But otherwise, I would be happy, you know, to help with.
Yeah. I will have to touch base with you on this. Yeah, I just click on the README file. I do see that there is some file references, but they're just names. But where to find those files? Yeah, I'll be in touch with you.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, if there's not anything else specific on that, Ashraf, can you stop sharing so I can share my screen, please?
Yeah.
Great, thank you. All right, I just wanted to highlight two things. The first thing is I'm sharing my screen. Somebody can let me know if they can see it.
Yeah, we can see it.
Great, okay. So this is, I guess it's a somewhat new feature or at least something new that we're using called releases in Jira. This allows us to see per release, all the tickets that are associated with that release. So we can even go back and see old releases if you wanted, but for the reason I'm highlighting this is that we need to make sure that for all the tickets that have been created or that we're working on, including effects and things, we need to make sure that they're set up properly to link to this version, that the statuses are correct, so that this release view can be correct. This will be helpful for us when we are getting to the time to do the release and we want to create our release notes. We want to be able to show at a high level what a given release, what was accomplished in a given release, actually at a very detailed level, not a high level. In any case, please do make sure that when you're going through your tickets that they all have the appropriate, all this, the information defined correctly. You know, so the component is defined, the epic link is set up and properly linked, the epic is updated. Particularly important is this fixed version, so that this will help us to be able to keep track of what is being done in the tickets. So please, this will fall somewhat on the team leads, but as you're working on things, if you notice that the tickets that you're working on don't have these things set properly, please make sure that they get set properly. Any questions?
Could you just for the reinforcement, could you just repeat the specific items that we should be updating? Sorry, I was just keeping some notes and got distracted. Sorry.
That's okay. Let me go back to...
In Wes, there's also in the software development page in the wiki, a list of every single field in a Jira ticket and what should be updated, just so you know if that is more helpful than going through each one.
Boom, there you go. So do you see this, Ashraf?
Mm-hmm.
So here, I can paste this in once I find the chat thing. Here is this link. So this is the information that needs to be filled out.
Okay. So let me make sure that I get that from Zoom, because once you close the Zoom, I would lose that link.
I have also sent you the links in Zoom. And to call out, so going back, Wes, if you go to the other view, specifically that view is being driven by the fixed version and the status of the ticket, if it is in progress, in review, if it is done or dead. So those are pretty important fields that I think every person can keep updated if at a minimum. Is that fixed version and the status of the ticket.
Thanks, Mary Jo. All right, we have 10 minutes left. So in the remaining time, I just wanted to call out something, and that is that this is Mary Jo's last showcase meeting. Mary Jo will be finishing at the end of the week. This will be a big transition for the team, and we are really grateful to the 2.5 years or more that she has been shepherding the OpenLMIS development and work going forward. She does a lot of things that I don't think any of us have really seen in the background. And so I just wanted to give an opportunity to the people on this call, since I think this is probably the call that we have the most most of our development team on. Just an opportunity for people to share any appreciation or any thoughts they have with Mary Jo here as she's heading on to something new and different. So I'll open it up to anybody who would like to share anything.
Yeah, so this is Ashraf. I think that, in the governance committee, when Shipa has disclosed that, we have been, we also chipped in a bit. At the time, what I said that, she was the personification for the OpenLMIS, at least the version 3 and the microservice-based one. And I still vividly recall that, Jack and Mary Jo came to DC and went to different donors and then made a pitch for this. Initially, there was not a very kind of certain that, everybody is on board with this, but she and Jack really spearheaded that. And then Jack left a bit early and then she still remained and she took the charge for the, and then she became the leader, not only for the initial upgrade with the Sol Develop team, but for the GAP project, she also was the person who really took the lead and made that GAP project work and made it very democratized. And I believe has earned lots of kudos because of the way that she, was very, democratic and transparent. And that has really, in the end, made the whole thing work because people appreciated the sincerity and the vision behind this. So I'm sure that she's leaving behind a team that is equally competent, and we know who they are. So I have full confidence on that. But we would sorely miss her. And I also told at the governance committee that hopefully she would find a ways to still keep in touch with us.
Thanks, Ashraf.
I will add to that OpenLMIS community will definitely miss you, Mary Jo. And as I have told you before, you are the model product owner in my eyes. I have started working on OpenLMIS pretty much the same time that we did in Sol Develop. Yeah, and I am great that we had that opportunity to work with you and to learn OpenLMIS together to improve it. So yeah, thank you for all of that.
Thanks, Sebastian.
Yes, I will only add that it was a really, really pleasure to be working with you. And it was really helpful understanding the domain of OpenLMIS for the Sol Develop side. So yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'm sure all of you know how much I'm going to miss you. And I will still be around. It is an open source community. So I would definitely find ways to still come in and follow along. So, and I'm sure you all are in very capable hands, and I'm really proud of all the work we've accomplished, and I'm really excited to see what happens next. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mary Jo. If anybody else has anything they want to share, please, don't hesitate to reach out to Mary Jo and let her know. These kind of transitions can be tough when you're moving from something that you enjoyed doing. And I know Mary Jo was, she loved with the work that she was doing here, even if at times it drove her a little bit nuts, but we will miss you, Mary Jo. And for those who don't know, Mary Jo is a very good soccer player. So watch out if you ever get the opportunity to go up against her in the field.
Thanks, Wes.
Okay. I think that's enough for this showcase meeting. That was the Sprint Showcase for 117. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
You too. Bye.